The 2019 high school graduation was a special one for students in Kalamazoo. Those graduating seniors were in kindergarten for the start of the Kalamazoo Promise. That's the program that gives them a tuition-free path to a post-secondary education. So these kids have had the Kalamazoo Promise from their very start. It's a good time to review these Promise programs and how they're faring in Michigan. To help us with that, I spoke to Michelle Miller Adams this past spring. She's a political science professor at Grand Valley State University and a senior researcher at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. Michelle, since it all began in 2005 in Michigan with Kalamazoo, there are 21 unique Promise programs around the state. Can you give us some examples of the variety of programs out there for students in Michigan?
That is a great question, because these programs vary from each other in ways large and small, and I think it's safe to say that no two of them are alike. We have programs that will, like the Kalamazoo Promise, allow students to go to any public and some private institutions in Michigan, have their tuition covered all or in part. We also have programs that allow students to attend just a local community college, and then we have everything in between. The reason is that these programs come out of their local community, and they're set up really to respond to local needs, and they build on the community's local assets. So that's why they look a little bit different in different places.
Now, the Kalamazoo Promise is funded by anonymous donors, and boy, that secret has been buttoned down all of these years. They've done a good job.
Yes.
But not all communities are so lucky. Where do some of these other programs get the money to send kids on to post-secondary education?
Once again, there's a pretty wide variety in terms of funding. We have a population of programs in Michigan, about 15 of them, that are Michigan Promise Zones that were authorized by our legislature. And the funding for those particular programs is a mixture of private and public money. But the rest of the programs are really funded by private philanthropy, private business. I don't think any other program is funded anonymously, but the sources of funding are similar in different communities.
So when we hear of Promise Zones, that's there's some state money involved in that.
Yes, that was an innovative financing structure that was pioneered under the Granholm administration and then was expanded under the Snyder administration, where communities raise money locally, philanthropic money, business money, individual money, and then after a couple of years, they start to receive a portion of the increase in the state education tax. This is the kind of funding structure that's sometimes used for downtown development districts. It's called a tax increment financing structure. So there's kind of a kickback of state money into these local Promise programs that supplements the philanthropic and corporate money that has been raised.
Michelle, there's another fundraising distinction that we'd love to have you explain for us, the difference between a first dollar program and a last dollar program.
Sure, and that's a really important difference. So a first dollar program, of which there are almost none, Kalamazoo Promise is one of them, and we do have one other example in Michigan, is a scholarship that students get first. They get it before their other sources of financial aid, and then if they qualify for other financial aid resources, like the largest one, of course, is Pell Grants, those will get added on top of the Promise grant. Most programs are structured on what's called a last dollar basis, where students use their need-based aid first, and then if there's a gap between what their Pell Grants will cover and the cost of tuition and fees, the Promise program will close that gap.
Okay.
And that's a much more economical way to structure a Promise program, which is why most of them are structured that way.
And as you look at these different models across the state, these various funding models, do they affect which students can take advantage of the program and, you know, which ones tend to work better than others?
They do. They have really important what we could call distributional impacts, and I don't think that anybody designs a Promise program to not help the neediest of students, but many of these last dollar programs have the unintended consequence of bringing most of their resources to students that are not poor. And the reason for that is that many of these programs only provide a path to a two-year institution and serve many low-income students who qualify for Pell Grants. And in Michigan, a maximum Pell Grant will more than cover your community college tuition. What that means is in a Promise community that has a last dollar community college-only Promise, low-income students are not getting any new money. The new money is going to students just above the Pell Grant cutoff. And there are a couple of things I want to say about that. One is that many students who are above the Pell cutoff still have a hard time affording college. They don't have access to Pell Grants, and yet college costs have risen so much that this is a population that really needs support, so that's a good thing. And there are some other benefits that come along with having a very simple, clear promise program. So, for example, if you can say to students in a school district like Detroit, for example, your tuition and fees will be covered at any one of our local community colleges, over the years, you're going to get many more of those students filling out their FAFSA and actually tapping those Pell Grants that they are qualified for. So there are still benefits for low-income students, but many of these programs actually direct most of their financial resources to students that are not economically disadvantaged. And I think that's important to understand, and I think it's largely an unintended consequence of this first dollar, last dollar distinction.
Let's talk about student achievement. Some programs like Kalamazoo seem to have certain disparities as far as how well students of color and low-income students are succeeding in whatever they do in their post-secondary education compared to their white and higher-income peers. Why is there that gap, and is that common among other Promise programs?
Yeah, that's common everywhere among Promise programs. It's common in school districts all around the country, and it really has to do with poverty. And as you know, and your listeners know, there's a strong overlap between being a person of color and being a child in poverty. And so when you see racial disparities show up, they're usually a function of socioeconomic disparities. And the achievement gap is not something that just magically shows up around high school graduation or college going rates. It goes all the way back. It goes back to who has had the opportunity to have a high quality early childhood experience when they're 3 and 4 years old, who enters kindergarten ready to learn, who gets suspended at higher rates. It's African American boys. That's the answer. Mm. And so those achievement gaps run throughout the entire pre-K through 12 system, and it's not surprising at all that they continue to show up around high school graduation, college going, college progression, and college degree completion.
Can schools and Promise organizations take steps to reduce these achievement gaps? Are they doing that?
Yes. One of the most important things they do is that when these disparities show up, they kind of shine a spotlight back onto that K through 12 experience to say why are African American males coming through this school district so much less likely to go to college, or if they go to college, why are they so much less likely to receive a degree? And so it really forces communities to kind of look back and examine what's going on, not just in their school districts but in their communities, where maybe you have high poverty neighborhoods or areas of concentrated poverty or schools that have very high levels of concentrated poverty or generational poverty. And so many of these Promise programs, and this is certainly true in Kalamazoo, they go hand in hand with efforts to address those underlying causes of generational poverty. That's not coming directly from the school district or directly from the Promise program, but these programs are catalysts for attention to things that happen outside of school. And as we all know, what happens outside of school is a really important predictor of what's going to happen in school.
Michelle, looking ahead 12 years down the road, when today's kindergartners will be graduating high school, what do you think needs to happen to ensure that the existing Promise programs are sustainable and effective and that new ones emerge?
I think in our state in particular, we have a crisis of school funding. We are underfunding our K through 12 institutions. We're actually underfunding our higher ed institutions as well. So schools are strapped for resources. Even schools that have experienced enrollment growth, like the Kalamazoo Public Schools, there aren't enough guidance counselors, there aren't enough school psychologists, there aren't enough support staff for kids with special needs. There is a lot of work that can be done about making school districts healthier and less resource strapped that I think would be very helpful. I also think there's a lot of work that can be done in communities to really rally around students that face economic disadvantages and really bring them the supports that they need all the way from pre-K on up into tutoring, mentoring programs designed around college going and college success. The good news is that because of its focus on place, on relatively small places, a city, a school district, a county, these promise programs can act as catalysts to bring those supports into existence. And we've seen that in Kalamazoo, so I really think that some of these disparities that we're seeing now as kind of our first generation of promise students graduate will be reduced in coming years.
Michelle Miller-Adams, Grand Valley State University. It was a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.